चक्षुस्मृतं जिनतस्मिंसि रवेनम श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्तपितं येन बुद्धले सायं रूपकदामयं तथति सापदा. Thinking of how to retaliate. Easy. Gently. Not water sports. The pool. We've heard the beginning of the pastime of Krishna's chastisement of Kaliya, which began at the end of the 15th chapter, where Krishna, or Balaram actually, killed Dhanukasura and then entered Vrindavan. When he entered Vrindavan, he was met by the affectionate glances and smiles of the Braja Gopis, and then was taken care of by his mothers, Yasoda and Rohini. And then a new pastime began at the end of the 15th chapter. That new pastime was Krishna and the cowherd boys going down to the river Jamuna and with the cows, but not with Balaram, because it was Balaram's birthday, and he was kept home for the appropriate ceremonies, auspicious sanskara ceremonies. So the boys and the cows rushed ahead, and so this means it was on Balaram's Jayanti. This was the appearance day of Balaram, and the boys and the cows, due to the heat of that season, they drank the water from the Yamuna and they fell down dead, poisoned. Then Krishna glanced at the cowherd boys and the cows, and he brought them back to life instantaneously. And the cows and cowherd boys, especially, it doesn't say what the cows were thinking, but the cowherd boys understood that this has occurred. They understood they had died, and that their coming back to life was simply on account of the merciful glance of Krishna. So the next chapter begins with Sukadev Goswami saying, this is text 1 in chapter 16, Sri Shuka Uvacha Velokya Dushitam Krishnam Krishna Krishna Hina Vibhu Tasya Vishudam Anvijan Sarpam Tam Madhavasyayat. So Velokya Dushitam Krishnam. This Krishnam in this part of the text means the river Yamuna, because the river Yamuna is blackish in color, darkish in color. The waters flow in that way. So Vilokya, Krishna seeing Dushitam, the contaminated water from the Krishna, the river Yamuna, then Krishna, another Krishna is used as the first word in the second part of the line. So Vilokya, seeing Dushitam, the contaminated Krishna, the Yamuna River, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he understood, Krishna saw this, and Krishna Ahina, he understood the black serpent, because Krishna there, so there's three uses of the word Krishna in this one text. So Krishna Ahina, Krishna, Krishna Ahina, Vibhu. So the Almighty Lord, Vibhu, the powerful one, he understood that this contamination had been of the river, Tasya Vishudam. He understood the river had been contaminated by the black serpent Kaliya, and Tasya Vishudham Anvicham, desiring. Anvicham means desiring. Vishudham, the purification, Tasya, of that, of the river. Sarpam Tam Udavasayat. He sent this black snake away. So this is a summary of what happens in the Kaliya pastime. But this pastime is an actually incredible pastime. One would have to say it's one of the favorites of the devotees. But here in this first verse, Sukadeva Goswami explains the entire pastime in brief. And the word sarpam, one of the acharyas say that it means sarpam tam udavasayet. He sent away the sarp, the snake. Sarpan means he who slithers, not like a tree who cannot move. This black serpent, Krishnahina, he slithers, sarpam. He can slither away, and therefore he was capable of going elsewhere. And indeed, Krishna is going to send him elsewhere. And we'll read the comment of this verse by Srila. First by Srila Sridhar Swami. In the 16th chapter, it is described how Lord Krishna subdued Kaliya within the lake of the Yamuna. How after being prayed for by his wives, the wives of Kaliya, Lord Krishna showed him mercy. And how thus, after the pastime of killing the demon in the form of the jackass, of the donkey, Dunukasura, and eating the fruits of the palm trees, which took place in the previous chapter, the Lord felt satisfied, and being as he is the reservoir of all fine arts, he engaged himself in dancing on the stage of the hoods of Kaliya. And that's what's going to happen. Krishna, who is he is Nataraj, he is the best of dancers, but he's going to dance upon the heads of Kaliya. Because when Krishna performs his pastimes, he does so many things at once, and everything is wonderfully executed. Sanatana Goswami says, the Yamuna is Krishna on account of her color and also by name. And thus, she is the Lord's dear friend, because they share a common name. And because of being contaminated by poison, it is implied remedial measures were required. So what are the Yamuna is also called, we heard in the verse of the previous chapter, is called the Kalindi, being the daughter of the Kalinda Mountains. And the Yamuna also being Kalindi, but Kalinda means, the mountain means that the name of the mountain from where the Kalindi is born. It means that it destroys the effects of Kali, the quarrels of Kali. And this effect that the Kalinda Mountain has by name, it is also expected, one of the acharyas said, to be transferred to the daughter of the Kalindi, the daughter of the Kalinda Mountains. And also, who else is the Kalindi or Yamuna? What's the Huh? But that's not the prime one we think of. We think of Vishakha Devi, because the Kalindi, but the Yamuna is Vishakha Devi too, she's the sister of Yamaraj, and both are the daughters of Yamaraj, of the sun god rather. So this is the Yamuna. There are considered three especially holy items in Vrindavan. Sanatana Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the dust of Vrindavan, the Govanan hill, and the Yamuna. So Krishna acted beneficially. So yes, that he is very much by the word the black snake. So Sanatana Goswami has explained the three meanings of Krishna in this verse. By the word the black snake, Krishnaheen, it is stated that he is very much full of poison. Krishna means the personality of Godhead, who is personally descended for the purpose of benefiting the whole world. This is established by his acting beneficially for her, the Yamuna, by purifying her water. For Vrindavan, by assuring that they can just drink her water. For the whole universe, so this is how Krishna acts to purify, benefiting the whole world. And for the whole universe, by their being able to take salvation from such a great holy place, and also even for Kaliya, for his being subdued. He is Vibhu, or in other words, because he is capable of performing many purposes by one action. So Krishna is going to display many purposes by this one action of his chastising Kaliya. The second text. So after giving this summary of the pastime in text 1, King Prickett asked, O learned sage, please explain how the Supreme Personality of Godhead chastised the serpent Kaliya within the unfathomable waters of the Yamuna, the extremely deep waters of the Yamuna, and how it was that Kaliya had been living there for so many ages. How has this happened? Yata Sid Vipra Gata Yatam. Please explain, O learned Brahmana, how this all came about. The third verse. I'll read Sanatana Goswami's comment on the second verse. According to the established name, Kaliya's lake, Kaliya Ridda, Kaliya's lake, such a designation would not be possible if he had resided there for only a short time. The word Bhagavan in this text, Nigranad Bhagavan Nahim, the word Bhagavan is used in great joy with the idea, my own Lord. How is it that my own Lord, in the text, it's in the translation, it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Explain how he has translated, how he has chastised the serpent Kaliya. So Sanatana Goswami says, he's saying, how has my own Lord done this? Because he has fully taken shelter of Krishna. And remember, he's hearing these things just prior to his death, to his leaving this world. And he's asked previously, he asked all the great sages, what is the duty of one who is about to die? Who is about to leave this world? What is the best thing for him to do? And look what he's doing. He's hearing about Krishna. He's hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's hearing about Krishna. So he's saying great joy with the idea, my own Lord, or else it is expressed out of sorrow with the anticipation of his, Krishna's, suffering in the course of subduing the evil demon within the unfathomable waters. And this is going to be quite an amazing key to understanding what's going on, that Krishna appears to be suffering, because when we will hear it either today or tomorrow or whenever,
Krishna will jump in the water to chastise Kaliya, and Kaliya will capture him within his coils. And Krishna will stay in that way for one muhutta, for 48 minutes, while all the residents of Vrindavan, who for whom Krishna was everything, and they had no meaning to their lives, to their existence, without Krishna. And Krishna was in this precarious, dangerous situation. How much pain they underwent. If there is no relationship, there is no pain. That's like if a dear member of our family were to become ill, or were to get into an, were to fall into an accident or something like that. There's a feeling of what is the use of life? There's nothing there. There's nothing in existence. There's an emptiness. There's such pain. But in this world, there are thousands of people dying each day. There are thousands of accidents. But because there is no relationship, personal relationship with the people, we don't experience anything. And the deeper, the thicker the relationship, the more difficulty we experience due to the empathetic relationship. The full identification with the person due to relationship. So Krishna in this chapter is going to, one of the reasons why he's enacting this is to send Kaliya far away because he's poisoning the waters of the Jamuna. And another reason, perhaps somewhat more esoteric, why he's enacting this pastimes, he wants us to view through the words of Sukadeva Goswami what love actually is. What love for Krishna actually looks like. Because we'll get a chance to observe this, which is so difficult to see in this world. We'll be able to observe this by observing the residents of Vrindavan when Krishna is in this difficulty of being within the coils of the snake. We've already heard, we've gotten a glimpse of the cowherd boy's dealings with Krishna. We've gotten, and it seemed in some senses not so extraordinary, because they were playing with him. Of course, it's the most extraordinary, but it, because it's not a lila, it appears almost common and human. And we heard of the relationship that the gopis had through their exchange of glances in those two verses. And we heard about the loving dealings of Mother Yasoda. And now we're going to see even a more extreme example of love when the beloved is in a difficult situation. So Krishna displays these things to allow us again to view what love actually is. Because what's going on in someone's heart, consciousness, one cannot know until there is an external manifestation of it. Because anyone can say, oh, I'm a devotee, I love Krishna. And then you could say, no, you don't. And they could say, yes, I do. No, you don't. Yes, I do. And then, because who knows what's going on? You don't know what's going on in my heart. But through one's activities, one can actually understand. So we shall see this by Krishna's arrangement. So he's saying, my Lord, another meaning, one is out of his jubilation, and other, Sukadeva is saying it, or excuse me, Maharaj Prakrit is saying it, is expressed out of sorrow with the anticipation of his suffering in the course of subduing the evil within the unfathomable waters. Therefore, please speak about this in detail and thoroughly. He wants to hear about his beloved Lord. Or else Vipra, in the address given to Sukadeva, because of means he especially fills Vishesha Taprata, in the sense of fulfilling the desires of such persons as myself. So such persons as myself, meaning Prickett Raj, they simply want to hear about Krishna. This is the food. They take their food through their ears, their nourishment, and they want to hear about Krishna. And this gives them strength and life and brings the attachment to Krishna, which is so necessary to be detached from the material world, and especially when one is leaving this world, it's necessary to be detached, otherwise the incredible pain occurs and one has to return again. So the attachment to Krishna, to God, is the only thing that can give full detachment from the world of matter. So that was the comment of Sanatana Goswami. Visheshita Prati Vipra means that he fulfills the desires of such persons as myself. Text 3. Brahman Bhagavatas Tasya Bhumna Swachanda Bhaktina Gopalo Dara Charitam Kastripyetam Ritam Jusham. O Brahmana, the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead freely acts according to his own desires. And just see what's going to happen. Because it's difficult or impossible, practically speaking, to understand the Leela of Krishna, because what impels a human being to act is completely different from what impels Krishna to act. What impels a human to act is something external to himself, but Krishna has nothing external. There's no need he has. There's nothing that pushes him in one sense. There's no tinge of the modes of material nature. So what is it that makes Krishna act in these wonderful ways? This is due to his independent, free acting according to his desire. So look what he's independently choosing to do. And then it is up to us to hear the Acharya's comments as to what the purpose of these things are, and for us to meditate upon these activities, because they are so deep. So the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead acts according to his desires. Who could be satiated? That means filled so that one doesn't want any more. Who could be satiated when hearing the nectar of the magnanimous pastimes he performed as a cowherd in Vrindavan? They are magnanimous. They are udhara. Because they are these pastimes. Hearing them is what truly satisfies the soul. So he generously, magnanimously performs pastimes to give us some subject matter for hearing and to display his power and his dealings with his devotees and to display his devotees' love for him. So this is his great generosity. Because otherwise, when we think of the Supreme Lord, what do we have to think of? Not very much. And yet the material world is so full of varieties and so captivating. And when we don't have much to think of on the spiritual platform, no content to spirituality, then the material world naturally becomes overwhelming. So Krishna again is very generous. So read the comment to the third text by Sridharaswami. Just one sentence. The magnanimous acts which he performed as a coward boy are nectar, and therefore please speak about them. Sanatana Goswami has something more to say. And then Vishwanath also has something to say on this text. But it may be objected, Sukadev would reply, since the
he could reply, since the discussion of the particulars of this Leela would give rise to extreme grief because Krishna is going to be held by the serpent, and therefore I've simply mentioned it in brief. There's no need, it shouldn't be talked about in detail because hearing about it would give rise to grief. So someone could say that. That is replied to by the verse beginning Brahman. The personality of Godhead is endowed with all opulences, and therefore he is Bhumna, full in all aspects, and who is Swachandavarti, supremely independent. The activities of that personality who is characterized thus consists of tending cows, which are consequently Udara, meaning either super excellent or bestowing happiness. His activities, by definition, because he possesses these qualities, are by definition like nectar. So we should hear them, even though superficially they may appear to be awarding grief, they're actually like nectar. This is Sanatana Goswami's comment, implying that they are a powerful medicinal remedy which counteracts the great misery of material life, which is just like death. Or else there are three modifying descriptions give it evidence for his activities in tending the cows being magnanimous, Udara. The first is Bhagavata, since by those pastimes the status of Godhead is especially exhibited, and therefore Bhumna, meaning whose glories are unlimited, because his nature is that he acts according to his own desires. So of course it is inconceivable when we think of God, the Supreme Lord, to think of what he does. To arrive at accurately of the activities of the Supreme Lord through one's own intelligence, one cannot come to anything. One can either think that he's just sitting up on a throne, and what is he doing on the throne? He's watching every single creature in the universe and punishing this particular one who's sitting over there and giving a reward to this one over here and punishing that one and giving a reward to that one. And one can think that those are his activities, but that actually has nothing to do with the activities of, or he's busy making sure that the moon rises in its proper phase and that the sun exactly comes up on time and sets on schedule, and that the clouds have water in them, and that everyone is breathing properly. So just if there's no conception of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord, practically there is no conception of activities. Otherwise, one has to think of absurd things like that: is what does God do, or think that he does nothing, or think that he's impersonal, or what the contemporary New Agey impersonalists think, since we're ultimately, that everything is illusion and we're ultimately basically we're the Supreme and nothing is different from him. This is all just like play that we're doing and nothing, it's all illusion, so it doesn't make a difference what you do, so you might as well enjoy as much as you're capable of. Really, this is really the basic philosophy. It's all illusion, and you might as well just get into it. Don't take it so seriously. Just get into it and play it as if it was real. Enjoy the Leela. That's really how they think. They expressly will say this. But don't take it. Ultimately, just play it. And Prabhupada states this, he practically predicts the whole New Age philosophy in the Bhagavad Gita when he says, although they say everything is illusion, they're expert at enjoying this illusion. Their whole life is based on enjoying the illusion, or life which they can consider an illusion, but they're into it like anything. But actually the activities of Krishna are not like the activities of human beings at all. They are completely motivated by his own independent desires.
and water his desires, amazingly enough. He's herding the cows in the fields of Vrindavan. So unless one has some spiritual advancement, this is beyond the comprehension of ordinary persons. They cannot comprehend. They just think it's some type of mythology or just some old-fashioned stories from an old culture. But actually, it is the highest limit of ecstasy, these activities in the land of Vrindavan with the most exalted lovers of Krishna. This is the highest ecstasy. So he acts according to his own desire, chand icha. Or else from the actual point of view, that's suffering, because how are these pastimes that bring suffering, how are they considered magnanimous? That suffering is indeed tolerable, as stated by the three modifying adjectives. And by the first two adjectives, by the first two, it is refuted that he actually underwent the lamentable condition, and so on, which are about to be described. So Krishna being enwrapped by the coils of Kaliya doesn't have anything to do with him actually being in pain. And the residents of Vrindavan, his exalted devotees who are watching him in this lamentable, pitiable condition, are in transcendental ecstasy that is unfathomable. And it is inconceivable to the living entities. It is inconceivable what they are experiencing due to their love for Krishna. And it is even more inconceivable what Krishna is experiencing. And Sanatana Goswami will later give us some hints from a unique perspective what's going on. So he acts according to his own desires means, Sanatana Goswami says, that he simply... These are simply the sporting pastimes of he who is the greatest enjoyer of novel pleasures, not of misery. Not of misery, the pastimes. There's no misery in it. But his pleasures are all novel. His pastimes are completely unique, not hackneyed and done again and again. Purnas, purna, charvita, charvanarvanam. Like the activities of those in the material world, just chewing the chewed, trying to get pleasure from things that are again and again and again and again done by so many generations of people, trying to get pleasure eating, trying to get pleasure sleeping, mating, defending, trying to gather one's security, trying to get pleasure from the family, trying to get pleasure from amassing wealth, trying to get pleasure from crushing one. This is what's been going on for millions of years. And it hasn't satisfied anyone. It is not novel. It's hackneyed. But Krishna's pastimes are unique. Everything is unique. The fact that the Supreme Lord is wandering around the fields of Vrindavan as a cowherd boy, herding the cows, playing his flute, dancing upon the heads of Kaliya the serpent is so unique and wonderful and filled with ecstasy. It is alive with spiritual energy. So this is the supreme bliss. Even the word nectar, amrita, indicates that even this pastime, which is most unhappy, because Krishna is being held by the coils of the snake, is actually full of supreme bliss in the motive of pure love. And then finally, Sanatana Goswami says, the word Gopal is a vocative address to Sukadeva, O master of speech. Or else the idea is, O Sri Krishna, with the idea of Gopal, seeing the idea of seeing that he's seeing his spiritual master as not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The rest that he's saying to Sukadeva, you are not different from Gopal. You are representing him. You are not different.
For that reason, that you are not different from Gopal, I am capable of desisting from I'm incapable of desisting from wanting to hear. So what can I do? So please speak. Please speak about Krishna. Please speak about Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a short comment. His tending of the cows, because he says, please tell me about the activities he performed as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. Vishwanath says, his tending of the cows hints at his tending the ears and other senses of the devotees by the activities of his, which are udara, that they bestow happiness. So Sukadev begins his answer in text 4. Kalindyam kalayasya sid riddhakaschit vishagnina srapyamana payayasmin patantyupariga kaga. Sukadev Goswami said, within the river Kalindi, the Jamuna, was a lake inhabited by the serpent Kaliya, whose fiery poison constantly heated and boiled its waters. Indeed, the vapors thus created were so poisonous that birds flying over the contaminated lake would fall down into it. They would die just from the poisonous vapors when they were flying over it. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport, his comment is given in the Bhaktivedanta purport here. It says, in the regard, the Acharyas explain that the Kaliya lake was situated apart from the main current of the river. Otherwise, the Yamuna's waters would have been poisonous even in cities like Mathura and in other places further away. So what is that called when there is there's a river and then there is a... That's what a billabong is? Yeah. What is it in English? Really? That's the technical name for it. A cut-off meander? It's a meandering...
I think it's all original.
Probably.
Yes.
So that's what it was. It was a cut-off meander. A billabong. Otherwise, they even have billabongs in Vrindavan. Nice. Cool. And Sanatana Goswami says that it was so poisonous in this lake that the birds were flying a distance from it, and yet they would fall down dead. Text 5. The wind blowing over that deadly lake carried droplets of water to the shore, and simply by coming in contact with that poisonous breeze, all vegetation and creatures on the shore died. Purport. The word stira, unmoving creatures, refers to various types of vegetation, including trees, and jangama refers to moving creatures such as animals, reptiles, birds, and insects. Srila Sridhar Swami has quoted a further description of this lake from Sri Harivamsa. We won't read the Sanskrit, we'll just read the English. The lake was quite wide, 8 miles across at some points. That means a yojana. And even the demigods could not cross over it. The water in the lake was very deep, and like the immovable depths of the ocean, it could not be agitated. Approaching the lake was difficult, for its shores were covered with holes in which serpents lived. All around the lake was a fog generated by the fire of the serpent's poison, and this powerful fire would at once burn up every blade of grass that happened to fall into the water. For a distance of 8 miles from the lake, the atmosphere was most unpleasant. Srila Sanatana Goswami states, by the mystical science of Jalastamba, making solid items out of water, Kaliya had built his own city within the lake. Sanatana Goswami comments on text 5. The animals who traveled along the shores of the lake, being touched by the wind which had come in contact with the waves of poisonous water, and which wind thus contained small particles of water, those animals would die. By the word vipushmata, since the water of the lake was being brought to a boil, and by that there was always a rapid rising of foam upon those waters. Thus it is described the burning power of the wind. So the wind would carry the foam from the boiling waters, and thus all the vegetation within 8 miles was ruined. That was actually a comment of Sridhar Swami. Text 6. Lord Krishna saw how the Kaliya serpent had polluted the Yamuna River with his terrible, powerful poison. Since Krishna had descended from the spiritual world specifically to subdue envious demons, the Lord immediately climbed to the top of a very high Kadamba tree and prepared himself for battle. He tightened his belt, he slapped his arms, and then jumped into the poisonous water. Purport. According to the Acharyas, Lord Krishna also tied back the locks of his hair as he prepared to do battle with Kaliya. And Kaliya, they say the word tam in this verse, tam chandavega vishavirim avekshatena. The tam means he, Kaliya. He was very, very swift and therefore very dangerous to fight with. And Srila Sridhar Swami will read some of the comments. Because of the future good fortune of being touched by the feet of Sri Krishna, this was ultimately what was going to happen to him. It's referring to the Kadamba tree. Because of the future good fortune of being touched by the feet of Sri Krishna, it alone remained not dried out along the shore of the lake. And there is also the account in other Puranas which describe Garuda being engaged in taking away nectar and dropping. He stole away the nectar from the Amrita that was churned. And there was a curse that he had to free his mother from. And the payment of that, he would have to supply this nectar that was being churned from the ocean of milk. So he took that, and on the way, he, knowing that Krishna was going to need this tree to stand on, and that it was going to be completely, all the vegetation was going to be completely annihilated in that area. So, because naturally one asks the question, well, if all the vegetation was annihilated, how come that tree wasn't annihilated, and how come it's still alive to this very day? So one answer from the Puranas is that Garuda, knowing that Krishna would require this tree in the future, he placed a drop of nectar on it. And nectar means amrita, and amrita means no death. So this amrita, this deathless potion, he placed on the tree, and therefore it alone was still alive. And then Sanatana Goswami also says, this is continuing with Sridhar Swami's comment. He says, asphotya means slapping his arms with the palms of his hands, open hands, like that, like wrestlers may do to show their prowess and get ready to fight. So Krishna, the young boy, was doing this. And he tightly tied the belt of his garments too, getting ready for the battle. Sanatana Goswami says, vega means power or else speed. The word chanda implies the idea, because of it being impossible to counteract the poison, he must be expelled from this place. Kaliya is going to have to leave. Adhiruya means climbing upon the branches. It is also described in the same section of Harivamsa. The clever Krishna joyfully climbed up the top of a Kadamba tree. Tata means from that Kadamba tree, and by the word Gadarasana, it indicates that he indirectly, the tight binding up of his hair and so on. And he firmly tied up his clothing. Krishna then threw himself down, face first, into the water. Did a proper dive.
In the alternate reading, the word niapat means jumped. The idea is that jumping with great force, he fell into the middle of the lake. He did this because his incarnation, his descent from Vaikuntha, is for the purpose of subduing evil, the corrupt. Or else, he who had assumed the incarnation of Matsya, the fish, and so on, he leaped into the lake for the purpose of subduing Kaliya. So this is what Krishna has done. It's further descriptions. He has jumped in, prepared himself for the battle, climbed the Kadamba tree, tied back his clothing, his belt, his hair, and jumped in. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has one sentence. He tightly bound up his belt, and also, as directly implied by the word rasana, the locks of his hair, his turban, and so on. Text 7. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead landed in the serpent's lake, the snakes there became extremely agitated and began breathing heavily, further polluting in the lake with volumes of poison. The force of the Lord's entrance into the lake caused it to overflow on all sides, and poisonous, fearsome waves flooded the surrounding lands up to a distance of 100 bow lengths. This is not at all amazing, however, for the Supreme Lord possesses infinite strength, because we have to remember that Krishna jumped in, but he's just a young boy. And yet, I think a bow length, I think there's an estimation that we'll read of how big a bow length is, but say it's a meter or something like that. So 100 meters, that when Krishna, this young boy, jumped in, there was a great wave, came out 100 meters of this poisonous water, as if a huge object had fallen to the lake. And this again is not amazing, because Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He possesses infinite strength. He can do whatever he likes. Srila Sridhar Swami comments to text 7. Then the serpent's lake, by the weight of the Supreme Personality of Godhead falling into it, had all of its waters raised and poisoned from the snakes who were thus agitated. The waves of water became fearful, contaminated by the poison, and they spread about on all sides. They flooded to the measurement of 100 bow lengths. Same point. Sanatana Goswami, one sentence that's we'll read here. The force of his falling down is because the force of his falling down was because he is the greatest of personalities. And Vishwanath says, by the force of the falling down of the Lord, by the power, strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, that lake became overflooded with the poison of the serpents who were agitated. So they produced more poison due to their agitation, and that made the waves of poison spread more thickly. The lake, whose waves became contaminated with the poison, was colored red and yellow and was fearsome. So here's the measurement. If anyone likes the details on these things. The measurement of 8 barley germs, what would you call them? We would call them kernels, yes. 8 barley kernels is 1 thumb, and 3 thumbs is a palm. 3 palms make a hand, 2 hands are considered a kishu, and 2 kishus is called a danor, or a bow length. So that's 12 palms. So 1, 2, 3. So this is how many inches? Or what is that in feet? It's about 14 inches, we say. So 14 times 4. So it's about 40 inches or something. Yes. Yeah, so 100 of those. So that's a lot. So let's say a yard and a half. So it's 150 to 200 yards or meters or something like that. So that was the huge wave, yellow, reddish wave of poisonous water came flooding out for all that distance.
something like that, yes. Text 8. Krishna. So what did Krishna do? He jumped in with huge force into the water after tightening his garments and pulling back his hair. And what did this Supreme Lord start doing, who is all powerful and always does novel things? So in this poisonous reddish yellow water that was filled with snakes, Krishna began sporting in Kaliya's lake like a lordly elephant. And he swirled his mighty arms, and he made the water resound in various ways. When Kaliya heard these sounds, he understood that someone was trespassing in his lake. The serpent could not tolerate this, and immediately he came forward. Purport. According to the Acharyas, Lord Krishna was producing wonderful musical sounds within the water simply by splashing his hands and arms. So Krishna has such taste. Everything is done with finesse, and is wonderful. So some of the Acharyas comment here. Sridhar Swami comments. Hearing the resounding of the water caused by the strong arms of him, of Krishna, playing in the lake, and seeing the trespass of his residents, the serpent, being unable to tolerate that, came forward. What was he, what was Krishna doing? He was engaged in playing, performing the sports of producing various musical sounds with the water. The word anga here, affectionate address stated for the purpose of ridding the king of his pain. The idea is, O Anga, O you who are personally identified with the Lord. So he said that in the Sanskrit, he's calling the king Anga, because Anga means part, the limb, the part of it. So he's calling Anga, you are a part of Krishna. So you have addressing him with that full identification. Vara Varana means a maddened lordly elephant. He who sports of splashing around in the water are like the pastimes of an elephant. Or else whose vikram or playful motions within the water is just like an elephant's. Or else he whose vikram, exceptional power, even in his anga, any of the least significance of the joints of his lotus feet, is greater than even the strength of the greatest elephant, Aravata. Because every part of Krishna's body is unlimitedly powerful. Thus the implication is that it is not all amazing that there arose a great sound from the water being hit by his mighty arms. Nariksha means glancing. Because he engaged his eyes after hearing that sound, that's Kaliya, he engaged his eyes after hearing that sound, he paid no proper regard to the beauty which is going to be described. He was so intent and so angry, Kaliya was. Or because otherwise it would have been impossible for him to have bit the Lord, which is going to happen next. He's actually going to bite Krishna. He cannot tolerate it, that his place has been attacked, but he's not really paying attention to Krishna's beauty, Sanatana Goswami says, or Sridhar Swami says, otherwise it would have been impossible for him to bite Krishna and attack Krishna. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, a short comment. Krishna was enjoying. What was he doing? He was enjoying in the water. That's Krishna. He's always enjoying, no matter what he does. And whatever he does, he enjoys. And we, in our imitation, whatever we do, even the attempts to enjoyment, just bring suffering ultimately. Because he is the Bhoktaram. He is the Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. He is the enjoyer. We enjoy in a different way by making him enjoy, helping him, assisting him in his enjoyment. So Vishwanath says, what was he doing? He was enjoying. He was creating various kinds of musical sounds in the water. The resounding of the water vadam jalanam, caused by being the water being swirled about by his mighty arms. And hearing that, and from that sound, taking note of the trespass of his own residence, Kaliya became unable to tolerate Krishna's presence. Then in the next verse, in text 9, which we won't read now, then it describes when Kaliya came rushing out, what did he see? He was confronted with the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what did he see and what did he do? Actually, we'll read that, and then we'll, because that's a natural place to end. Krishna saw that Sri Krishna, who wore yellow silken garments, was very delicate because he came rushing out. His attractive body shining like glowing white, like a glowing white cloud. His chest was bearing the mark of Srivats. His face was smiling beautifully and his feet resembling the whirl of a lotus flower. The Lord was playing fearlessly in the water. And despite his wonderful appearance, the envious Kaliya furiously bit him on the chest and then completely enwrapped him in his coils. Immediately bit Krishna and enwrapped him. This is the part that Sukadeva was afraid of Maharaj Prickett hearing. It was so painful for him to hear that Krishna was bitten by this horrible snake. Sridhar Swami comments, seeing him who was most worthy of being seen, who was very delicate in appearance, and who was brilliant like a cloud with the sun behind it, a monsoon rain cloud. He whose yellow garments were flying upward and who was decorated with Srivats, the mark of the goddess of fortune, with his arms, which means the snake, with his arms, meaning Kaliya's arms, means his snake body, his coils, he enveloped Krishna. Sanatana Goswami says, despite the beautiful appearance of Krishna, this evil person, Kaliya, acted thus, exhibiting his great offensiveness. Sukadev was lamenting with great affection, and he presents details in the verse beginning, Tam Prasagnya, that's this ninth verse. Or else, even though seeing that Krishna was fearless, still Kaliya enveloped him. With what? With his arms, because the word is bhujaya chadha. He enveloped him with his bhuja, means arms, with his snake-like coils. With what? With his arms, his snake body. In actuality, now listen to what Sanatana Goswami says. In actuality, however, his biting the Lord upon his heart should be understood as his heartily kissing the Lord's limbs. And his covering him with his snake body should be understood as his firmly embracing all the Lord's limbs. Therefore, with anger, in the verse, he furiously bit him on the chest. With anger means as if with anger, but actually it was with pure love. This is because the Lord was most worthy of being seen in the verse. And therefore the Lord is about to show him great mercy. So Sanatana Goswami will make several comments like that, that he reinterprets everything to show how it was actually just a dealing of love between Krishna and Kaliya. And Vishwanath has a short comment. His form, although most attractive to see, bestowing such happiness, appeared to Kaliya as just the opposite, as stated in this verse beginning, Tam. Seeing him who is brilliant like a cloud and whose yellow garment was adhering to the Srivats mark because of his engaged in sporting. So his body was, as he was moving, the garments were adhering to his body and to the Srivats marking. So this is the description of what happened next. Now Krishna is enveloped within the coils of the arms of Kaliya. And he's with the cowherd boys, he's with the cows, in the Yamuna River in Vrindavan.
How will everyone react? That's what the next section describes. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions, comments? And amazingly, Krishna, again, as we know, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's supremely independent, it was stated. And there is nothing that motivates him to act. There's no need. He has no lack. So there is no external motivation for him to act. His actions are determined by his desire. So look what he's desiring to do for his own purposes. So we'll hear about the results of this wonderful pastime as the days go on. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Sri Krishna Kaliya ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jaya.